podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello, welcome to another episode of the Attacking Scrum podcast. Thank you very much indeed for downloading. Another chat this week with good friend of the show, Yestin George. Yestin joined me on a very hot Sunday night, and I don't deal with the heat particularly well at the best of times, but that said, it was always a pleasure to catch up with him. So very much enjoyed chatting to Yestin tonight, and we got through loads of stuff. We had a look at the upcoming Pro 14 fixtures, and particularly generally the overall shape of the regions. We also managed to talk about the retirement of Nick Williams, big hole that will leave in regional rugby, and the huge impact that he's had. And we also covered a bit of the Lions from a coaching perspective, the Gareth Anscombe injury, loads of stuff. So there'll be plenty of stuff in there for you to get your teeth into. And also me defending the Jamie Roberts signing at the Dragons, hopefully with a bit of balance rather than just being a one-eyed Dragons fan. But you be the judge of that by going and having a listen. A few things. If you're able to give us a review on iTunes, that would be fantastic. If you can write us a review, if you enjoy this podcast, that would be fantastic. Or Apple Podcasts, as it's now called. And finally, as always, a big thanks to our sponsors at So Coffee Trades. You can now get instant coffee from So Coffee Trades. So do that at socoffeetrades.co.uk.
Shane Williams in midfield. Must be Lee Byrne. Williams. Shane Williams started it and finishes it.
Welcome to another episode of the Attacking Scrum podcast. Once again, I'm delighted to say that good friend of the show, Yestin George, joins us. How are we doing, Yestin?
I'm doing very well, thanks, Jared.
You made me feel very bad off air there when I said I'm no good in this heat and I've done nothing all day, and you said you've cycled from Sussex to Winchester and back over the course of the last few days.
I know. I mean, I do feel like somebody else. I've inherited somebody else's legs now 4 days after I've done it. After 4 days of cycling, they're not legs that I recognise. It's like I've borrowed somebody's actual functioning normal legs. But the will is still as weak as ever. I just like that to go down in record. So whenever I come to look at a hill, my heart sinks and I go, oh, I'll never make it. And then apparently the legs don't necessarily function along the same lines as my pathetically weak will. So it's been quite good fun.
It can't be that way. Well, you certainly made me feel bad when, you know, I've spent the afternoon either outside trying to stay outside for a while and then coming inside, shutting the curtains and watching old episodes of The Chase, entertain my daughter for brief moments of time. But I have picked up what you could only describe as a you've been living in Surrey too long injury.
And
so Friday night, I managed to slice the top of my finger, making an orange peel slice to go in some gin.
That's like, a killer.
That is a Surrey injury, though, isn't it? And I did the avocado stone last year, so like I think if I choke on some quinoa, we've got the triple crown going on there. Not good. But we do have some rugby to talk about, which is just as well. And we're getting ever closer to the season returning. So maybe we'll start by talking about the Pro 14, and we're only 2 weeks away from that coming back. I know we've covered this a few times, but how do you feel looking forward to this? Are you actually kind of excited about the return of the Welsh club sides?
I still feel slightly kind of bemused by it all, really. I think obviously there's something all of the teams are in a state of relative flux. It's really exciting to think about how the Dragons will get on, and you'd hope that they'd hit the ground running. But, you know, with the Ospreys, you just don't know what's going to happen. you just cross your fingers. Scarlets have got a reconstruction job of sorts, but obviously they've had some good news this week with loads of players signing up, commitments, sense of kind of certainly sending out a message of we are solid and we're moving forward together. I think that was purely from a PR manager.
It's a nice PR touch, isn't it? Yeah. And that's 17 signings on one day is a good one, because it is clever actually. Because if you look at the list of players on there, you'd say Halfpenny, Gareth Davis and Patchell and probably Samson Lee are the biggest names within there. And then you've got some squad players and some young players. But by announcing 17, it does get a bit more press coverage. And you're right, it sends out that message that, we're a solid unit of, and we've got this kind of this continuity of players, which is generally a positive thing.
Yeah, and it's quite kind of wily as well, because I think that, doom-laden naysayers like myself were kind of thinking, it didn't actually go swimmingly well for them last year, or in the season that hasn't quite finished. And so I was thinking question marks were there about whether they were going to progress or whether they were going to go backwards. And then you've got Cardiff, obviously. They've got some recruits. Obviously, big retirement announcement this week, but hopefully plenty of positive things to look forward to, and hopefully some players coming back to fitness as well.
Yeah, I mean, we'll talk about Nick Williams in a second, but what I was saying to Dan last week, actually, I do think that we're in a position now where, at least on paper, these squads, I think, across the board, look a lot stronger than they have done. Because in the past, you've had very strong Ospreys squads and very weak Dragons ones at the same time, and strong Scarlet squads and weak Cardiff ones, and strong Cardiff. You get the picture. But actually, I think you can genuinely look at all four squads and say that they are in much more positive places, and that recruitment looks pretty encouraging on paper, because I remember seeing the summers of Cardiff signing, some really wily recruits, and my hero Matthew Morgan, and likewise, and at the same time down at the Dragons, we were again just picking up a few ex-Cardiff players, and that was it. And you just thought, God, there's not even anything to really get cheery about here. There's nothing to really look at and say this season's going to be different. Whereas I think the Ospreys and Dragons have recruited well. Scarlets, like you say, have kept hold of a lot of players, and then a couple of savvy signings. And then Cardiff have probably been the quietest in terms of recruitment. But then they've also, I think, got a lot of squad players coming back from injury, and a lot of squad young players in key positions who you would hope would be able to step up. And amongst all of that, I think the key thing is coaching appointments, and that's the bit where I think the Ospreys have got something to be really positive about. They've gone for experience now in terms of coaching, and the experiments of the past haven't worked out. It certainly didn't work out in Alan Clark's case. Whereas I think Booth and having Brock James alongside him, that I think is something that you're going to expect a lot more structure. And having Ruddock above, I think all of that is potentially something to be quite infused by. Now, you're often the, as you say, the doom monger when it comes to the Ospreys. But how do you feel kind of going into this set of games, and then a new season around the corner after that?
Well, again, just to talk purely in terms of marketing and in terms of the way that they presented it, they released a story, the kind of Booth outlines new Ospreys vision, which actually didn't outline very much at all, apart from the fact that it was, the past is done and we're going to move into the future. So I suppose in a way it's better than saying we're going to smash everybody and we're going to be brilliant, and then falling straight to the first hurdle. my doom-laden-ness, which is not obviously a phrase, is based on really genuinely having just that you have to just think about it's about the performances, and it's not about creating an Australia Mark II or any nonsense like that. It's about just there's no hiding place. After I thought, you know, such a shocking season, really.
I mean, there's
no hiding place.
An unimaginably bad season. If you were to say, you know, if you go back 5 years and say the Ospreys would have a season like this, you know, so 5 years ago, you're looking at the post-Galactico era, but you had stability there. You know, when we first started doing this podcast, me and Dan used to say, you know, at that point in time, that the Ospreys had kind of moved under Tandy to at least a degree of stability. Now, I know, you know, he wasn't everyone's cup of tea, but they weren't getting pumped week in, week out, as the Ospreys were last season. It was just so, so unexpected, given the fact that they'd been the you know, probably the most consistent side throughout the history of regional rugby.
And you can't have the patience, you know, again, I sound like a Man United fan or something. You know, that kind of, or even, you know, name the club, really, Tottenham is the same. You can't have a Dragons, a period of slow, respectable kind of progress. It just can't happen. I don't think it can happen. There's too much jeopardy. There's too much at stake. They need to excite people after. And I know that you've gallantly supported really the Tandy era and I think on reflection you're quite right to do so, because what came afterwards was considerably worse. But at the same time, if you want people to go and watch that team play, if you want to have, it's not about winning tournaments, but it is about playing to your potential as a team. And there was never any indication that that was happening, albeit with some terribly unfortunate injuries along the way. It just felt like there was rudderless and clueless, and obviously I really think that they've got to hit the ground running properly. You know, that's just what has to happen, really.
I never felt that lack of direction was Tandy's fault necessarily. I always thought he looked like a solid, good coach who had been put in a difficult position because you'd gone from the years of having director of rugby and head coach to him kind of just being the one man solely accountable for it. And when you consider that to, again, when he was in charge, the years before you would have had so much money coming in. And yes, the expectation was higher, but you'd had a hell of a lot more to work with under the Lynn Jones and Sean Holley eras. So I don't know. I just think that it was always going to be a tough ask. And gallant is probably the word. He did a gallant job during that time. But I think expectations, if not externally from the Ospreys, will be a hell of a lot higher now they've recruited these experienced coaches and added a few more experienced players to the lineup too. So I think
I don't think it'll be unrealistic expectations, but at the same time they have to be ambitious expectations. You know, it's not we might scrape two wins away and win half of our home games. That's not good enough. You know, it's got to be better than that.
The Ospreys generally didn't lose games. You know, it was only recently that they lost their Liberty home European record, wasn't it? We're only talking a season or so.
Yeah.
And you just think that it's become such a sharp decline that we've expected the Ospreys to get beaten every week. That, yeah, you're right, that has to go. I don't know whether they're going to be challenging for titles straight away. But
no, they're not.
No, I don't think so. But in a way, it kind of helps having the end of one season to come back and try a few things. And I actually think that having the Dragons first up, it's quite a good thing for them, because everyone is talking up the Dragons because their recruits are so much more high profile, which again, we'll come on to. But, you know, the Robertses and the Tompkins and these, you know, should Rowlands end up down there? These kind of players have come in with a much bigger profile, arguably, than the Ospreys signings have. And I think, in a way, that will probably suit the Ospreys because expectations won't necessarily be high. But I think they'll be targeting this game thinking, God, there's a chance to lay down a bit of a marker. And like you say, get people thinking, do you know what? When we're able to go back, I want to go and watch this side again.
What did you think when you sort of read stuff about Anscombe? What was your gut feeling?
My gut feeling is that's really quite worrying because that injury was close to a year ago that happened, and it looked bad at the time. And it was one of those jaw-dropping moments where you thought, is he trying to run off an ACL injury here? And it looked bad, and the diagnosis was bad straight away. But to be kind of a year down the line and there's no real sign of a return, that's definitely a worry. And particularly right now where we've had, you know, lockdown and things like that, which you think, well, actually that's gonna aid recovery because he's not gonna be missing any games. I think that it's definitely a concern. And obviously the signing of Milo is there to fill that gap. It's let's get some experience in, because presumably, I think, you know, they've looked at the outside halves who are there and thought they're not going to be able to, and certainly based on last season, they're not going to be able to do a job for us. So let's have, you know, a steady hand to come in and steer the ship during that time. And yeah, I don't think we're going to be seeing Anscombe anytime soon. You'd be very wary about rushing him back, particularly with these games now that don't, you know, there's nothing riding on them for the Ospreys.
It does suggest as well that they might be a 10 or 2 light still then, you know, if Anscombe's not coming back for a long time.
Yeah, you know? I mean, if you look at that squad, Luke Price really struggled and, you know, couldn't make that shirt his own. It's weird, but I still think that, I think Toby Booth would be looking at his squad on paper now and thinking, I'd love to have Sam Davis in this side.
Yeah, totally.
You know, particularly this version of Sam Davis, who's recovered his confidence. And, you know, I think outside of that, you've got Kai Evans, who I'm not sure whether he's a 10 or a 15 and is still cutting his teeth as a pro player.
Too much pressure.
I think there probably is, and it's about getting that experience and that game time right now. And then I don't know, I think it seems to be that they look at Prothero as a 15 or a winger rather than a 10. So you know, I think you're right, it looks as though they're light, but they would love Anscombe to be back and fully fit for the new season and then have that option. You know, it doesn't look as thin if Anscombe is there and fully fit and has put the injury woes behind him. But I don't know, it's certainly not good news in that regard.
Yeah.
But yeah, there you go. It'll be interesting. Sunday the 23rd of August, that game is the Ospreys against the Dragons. And the Dragons will line up, as we said, with this kind of strengthened squad, which we've spoken about a few times, and one of the worst kept secrets was unveiled this week with Jamie Roberts officially becoming a Dragons player, and it's not been without kind of controversy, I guess. There's been, you know, some discontent from the other regions saying that there was some kind of agreement in place that they weren't recruiting during this time, which all seems a little bit odd because either there is this agreement in place. If so, they've got legitimate cause to have grievance. But otherwise, you know, you'd expect them to be out there recruiting themselves, particularly Cardiff, I think. And the other reason is that at a time when you've got players taking wage cuts or they're trying to get that through, you've got a side that is owned by the Welsh Rugby Union recruiting a 33-year-old player who won't be on a central contract. But for me, I don't know. I look at it and think, well, actually, the wage structure hasn't changed. The way that money is distributed hasn't changed, despite the fact that the Dragons are owned by the union. And the other thing is, you know, you've got players like Moriarty, who was previously paid by the Dragons, will now be on one of those central contracts. That means that 80% of his wage, which from the figures I've heard is very, very considerable, you know, that's been freed up for them to put into other recruits. And I don't know what the deal is with Nick Tompkins, but I can't imagine the Dragons are paying his full wage for a season, particularly when there's no salary cap in the English Championship. So realistically, you know, it could just be a good way of him getting to play for Wales during these years, and Saracens keep him on the books. So I don't know. In a way, I'm kind of encouraged, because there's almost in the past 4 years, you've had a bit of sympathy towards the Dragons from other regional supporters, and now we kind of seem to be a little bit back into the parochial age, which gives me a little bit of faith that, I don't know, maybe we're going to see something a bit better on the pitch.
It's funny, isn't it? Because I'm slightly bemused at why people are so moody about it. I understand the principle of the argument, but I also understand, I can see the practicality of, do you want somebody to make a contribution who's got experience, reputation, that, he can only improve as they have, Dragons have done quite well with bringing the old boys back and giving them, giving them enough game time to make a contribution. So I don't have an issue with it. And but having said that, the parochial thing, just reading this week about Gareth Davis, wanting to be re-elected as WRU chairman. And I just always, whenever I see him, I always just remind myself how parochial I was at shouting at him how rubbish he was throughout the 1980s and constantly, not being able to sleep at nights, thinking why he was playing for Wales and not Malcolm Dacey or somebody from Swansea, obviously, or David Richards. And I you just think, sometimes you just get in that place in your head, and it's really hard to get out of it. It's impossible to get out of it. And I think you've hit the nail on the head by saying that if people are having a pop at the Dragons, it's probably a good thing, instead of having the sympathy vote.
Yeah, it's just an interesting one. And I think it's a bit of a reflection of this strange league that we're in. And, I've always taken the approach since regional rugby came into existence that, if we're playing in a league where it's the Ospreys against Connacht, well, I have no allegiance to Connacht whatsoever, whereas at least, a healthy Ospreys in theory would be a healthy Wales side. So I've always kind of been of that approach, which I don't know. I guess that's probably uncommon. I don't know. Again, maybe it's living outside Wales makes it easier to do that. But certainly if it was back 20 years ago, but I've been sat there thinking, I probably would. If Ebu Vale were playing Newcastle in the Challenge Cup, I'd rather Ebu Vale beat Newcastle than the English side won. I don't know. That's always been my approach. But and likewise, I've never had a problem with Cardiff particularly. Never really had a problem. Being kind of Newport's biggest rivals, it never really bothered me that Cardiff were doing well. I've always quite enjoyed watching rugby down there, and I don't know, maybe I'm in the minority. I always just thought, playing an English side, the English side were always going to be a bigger villain than a Welsh side doing well.
Yeah, absolutely. The only there are times when it's really important, when there are local derbies, and that's traditionally that was always the case. But even, the story I grew up with, which you've probably heard a million times, is that thing about, people from Llanelli sort of standing on top of hillsides cheering as Swansea burned in the Second World War because they've been bombed. It's just like an apocryphal story of nonsense. Do you know what I mean? It's ridiculous. And the same thing, I grew up in going to school in Swansea Valley, where there were, Scarlets fans and Neath fans and Swansea fans, and smattering of Aberavon and other clubs as well. But the rivalry was only there for, it's not Cardiff Swansea in the football, is it?
No, I don't think it is. And I always think as well, if you look back to those games where you'll see stadiums in the 70s packed out, packed out. Let's say, it's Newport versus the Springboks or the All Blacks or whatever. I've no doubt there will have been people from, from Ebbw Vale and from Pontypool who've gone down there to watch it and probably would rather see a Gwent side beat an international side from around the world.
I used to wear Jeff Wales shirt to Wales internationals and nobody ever gave me any stick about it at all, there's nothing it couldn't. I was wearing a white shirt, let's remind ourselves, it's like you're asking for it anyway. But there was always, there was always that shrill call of come on the whites, mock Pontypool sort of cries when Swansea ran out in, I've talked about this before, Swansea were always there do a hiding whenever, but it was mockery. That's all it was. It wasn't anything like the level of, I've been to the Vetch Field to watch Wales play international matches, and the opposition fans are going, why are the Welsh fans fighting each other? They were trying to take the North Bank. Cardiff were trying to take the North Bank of Swansea. I mean, there's nothing more parochial than what was happening in Welsh football from the late 70s onwards when I was going. I've never seen anything like that in rugby.
No, and I think that's the interesting thing. And if we look at, like you said there, growing up, you had you're at school with Swansea fans, Llanelli fans, Neath fans. The thing is that we really need to focus on is kids growing up now. you need to be worried about whether kids in Newport and Ebbw Vale are going to grow up supporting the Dragons, or they're going to grow up supporting Cardiff City, or maybe the county, or worse still, they grow up supporting Barcelona or Paris Saint-Germain or Messi, or these concepts that are completely alien to me. That's the battle now, is get kids excited about our game and get them, get them into those regional grounds, because we have had close to 20 years of infighting about what was the right setup and what wasn't. And you know what? It doesn't matter now. Look at that. That Cardiff side is full of Pontypridd boys. And you know what? I don't think they care that they're playing for a Cardiff Blues side, because they want to go out and that's the pathway, right? And I don't know that. Look, Ponty fans will probably throw that right back at me, but I just think that's what we've got to deal with now. We've got, I would love to see a professional side that was representing the Valleys, but it's not coming from anywhere anytime soon, is it? And so, realistically, would I rather that those boys went on and achieved great things and played for Wales rather than, were bitter about having to pull on a Cardiff jersey? Well, of course I would. But
and a year ago we were talking about shedding one of the regions as it was.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
let's just get realistic. For me, the most important things is not, again, going back to my professional Ospreys moaning, the squad depth was sort of 52 players or something like that, and all the regional clubs around that were supposed to be feeder clubs for the Ospreys had all kind of plunged, and got worse and worse and worse. And it felt to me like the Ospreys were not supporting the Bridgends and the Swanseas and the Neaths. There is a job to be done there, but you've absolutely crystallized it by saying, we got to get like 4,000 kids in grounds. It's just got to happen, otherwise it's unsustainable, isn't it? It can't carry on just because of TV money.
Yeah, it can't. It's not going to in Wales. Let's be honest, right? We're dealing with Premier Sports here. The fact that CVC have come in and invested it, as I say, I've said millions of times, is that they're not here for the good of the game. But the fact that they are here means that they're going to want some money to come into the Pro 14. So they're going to be out there trying to do a good TV deal. But if, you know, if it doesn't work out, they'll quite happily shed this league and it's gone. And like I say, they're not a charity. They'll leave it in ruins and it's gone. Any assets will be stripped and they're out, and balls to the rest of it. So, you know, the job there is for the union and the regions themselves to make sure that they can create a sustainable, it's a horrible word, I know, but a sustainable model of rugby that does reach out to those clubs. Because, you know, I don't really see that pathway being anymore, being, you know, you play with Bridgend until you're 20 and then you're in the Ospreys side, because I think you'll be in the Ospreys academy when you're 12, 13 years old. And but it's so important that those other sides that are the feeder clubs into the Ospreys are 100% part of the region, because it will be that you pick up a ball at Bridgend or Neath or wherever, you know, Astrid Gunlice, wherever it is, you pick up a ball and that's where you fall in love with rugby. And if you go on to get picked up by the Ospreys Academy or by the Scarlets Academy or whatever, I don't know, it's so important. So you shouldn't lose the history of it. I just think that financial model has not worked out right. It's been neither one thing nor the other. We have ended up with, realistically, we ended up with four super clubs, you know, rather than I guess start from scratch regions, but that's where we are, and it's got to work now. But you can't jettison those fantastic clubs that have contributed so much to Welsh rugby over the years, and more importantly to the communities that they live in. So it's we're not gonna have the answer to that now, but that for me puts the whole kind of, yeah, you know, the Dragons strengthening their squad thing into perspective.
Yeah, and the players are there, you know, these squads, like we just said, at the top of the programme, the squads that look stronger and better than they have done and more evenly balanced. And so Roberts coming in is a good thing for the game in Wales. End of story, really. It might be a point of debate. Yeah. But I think you can't say that it's not a good thing to have somebody with that experience back in the game in Wales.
The guy is the consummate professional off the field. You know, I just fail to see how, you know, particularly the young centres at the Dragons wouldn't sit there and listen to what when Jamie Roberts speaks, they're going to want to know what he's got to say.
Yeah,
I'm just convinced of that. And
Do you think that it's all going to gel quite nicely when they come back, or are you like me? Are you kind of slightly nervous about it?
I'm certainly nervous about it. I'm the main thing I'm nervous about is that there's a degree of expectation around the Dragons, but that's something they're going to have to deal with. And do I think it'll gel? Potentially not straight away. I'm not sure it's gonna work straight away, but I think that's more the fact that we're dealing with really weird times, because normally you'd have a pre-season, you'd be playing together, you'd be training together, you would have gone out and had an extensive pre-season to get the ring rustiness out of there, and all of that has been curtailed this time round. So that, I think, is going to be a bit of a problem when it comes to things clicking. But that's the same for all sides. Which means that maybe there is an opportunity to go out there and catch the Ospreys on the hop or whatever. We've seen that in other sports. We've seen it in the football and the cricket. Strange things have happened because it's a strange scenario to be in.
Yeah, absolutely.
Fantastic. Right, we're going to talk more about the Pro 14. We're actually going to talk about the Lions in the second half, but don't worry, it's all relevant news. We're also going to talk about the retirement of Nick Williams. So there's plenty more to come. But first, we're going to have this very quick break. Mentioned there just before the break, Yestin, that we were going to talk about the Lions, and I promised it would be relevant news, and it is. We're not going to get dragged down to the selecting your Lions Test 15 stuff just yet. We'll wait a good week or two for that. But a bit of a strange story I've seen this week, and that's kind of seems to be around Gatland's coaching side. So You had Wales Online reporting that Sean Edwards has ruled himself out and he's concentrating on France. And then BBC Wales were saying that that Andy Farrell has said he's not expecting the call anytime soon. It just feels a bit funny, almost like Edwards rules himself out and Farrell's kind of playing a little bit hard to get. Do you see anything other than Andy Farrell getting a gig on Warren Gatland's coaching side?
Well, it seemed like a natural thing to happen. I don't know whether he's like, I'm on a different pay grade now, Warren. You're gonna have to actually try a bit harder. I don't know whether that, because they've worked together before. They claim to be quite matey, so I don't know. But and maybe there's some. Could there be some Irish rugby union sort of dynamic to this as well, because they're not predisposed to being particularly friendly towards Gatland? It feels like there is something really interesting happening going behind closed doors, and I'm not entirely sure we'll ever find out what it is.
I wouldn't be surprised if there was one or two staffed suits at the Irish Rugby Union who wouldn't be massively keen on releasing their head coach. But I think more to the point, it's probably a question of there's going to be so much rugby to be played, and he's an inexperienced head coach at international level. He's going to have a hell of a lot of things to concentrate on himself without taking on a Lions coaching role too. So if you were on the IRFU board, you'd be a bit concerned about that, because he's going to have a hell of a workload as it is.
Yeah, it's going to be, I think, yeah, it's going to be a little soap opera behind closed doors, it feels to me.
And Gatland has his has worries of his own, really, because the return to the Chiefs has not been what he would have wanted or probably expected. And it does just make life a bit trickier for him, because he's, you know, he is juggling two roles here, and albeit a shorter season because of COVID, they've still been playing rugby for the last 7 or 8 weeks. And he's got a full-time role there to kind of juggle. It's certainly not what he would have wanted to have happened. But I don't know, I get the feeling that's not going to be a distraction when it comes to Springboks, because he's coached Wales sides that have been faltering by the time he's gone to go on the Lions tour anyway. So I don't know. I don't know. I don't think it's going to be as much of a distraction as perhaps it would for Andy Farrell, who is at a key point in his kind of early years of coaching at an international level.
Is there nothing that says to you that it's just one tour too far for Gatland?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. I think that's the other potential thing, is he might think he wants to freshen his coaching team up a little bit, because he's largely had the same guys around him. You know, Farrell has been there for, what, 13 and 17. And that, I think, is, I don't know, that's the one that I could see happening again. You know, obviously he's had Howley during that time as well, and Howley was there in 09. And that's probably the one area I could see it freshening up, because I think Rob Howley, you know, he's made abundantly clear he wants to return to rugby. And I think someone will look to bring Howley on board, if I'm honest. I think that, you know, he's been through a very tough personal time and made mistakes off the pitch that he will clearly have regretted and he should never have done. But you can't say fairer than kind of taking ownership of your addiction, because that's what it is, gambling. You know, it's easy to look at it and people say, oh, you know, what a prat and stuff like that. It's when you're in that much of a hole, you are severely addicted to carry out those actions. Doesn't make it right, but it means that you're in such a predicament that you've made incredibly bad judgment. It's cost him his job. He's gone away. He's got therapy and he's working his way through those demons, and wants to come back to rugby as a coach. I don't think that throwing himself into the Lions spotlight would be particularly good for him or the squad or Gatland, really.
It'd be interesting that you have to serve your term and then see what's happening. I wonder whether, you know, the sort of Gregor Townsend's sort of star is not being in the ascendant, and I don't know whether someone like would Dai Young be a candidate to go with the forwards, or would Richard Cockerell, or I don't know.
I mean, I'm always open to left field selections when it comes to, and actually I think what's great this time around is Gatland is not involved with the Wales team, so that is, you know, that is one less thing. It probably would have been a lot better if he'd had some good results as the head coach of the Chiefs, because that would have taken a bit of pressure off, because the one place in the world that will have as much scrutiny as rugby in Wales is in New Zealand. So that probably hasn't helped. But I've always thought it's better to have someone who doesn't necessarily coach one of the unions from a selection point of view. I know he coached Wales for 12 years, and if he does select a load of players, people say, you know, he's been biased, but he's got no reason to be biased now. He's not a man who lets emotion get in the way of making a call. Ask Brian O'Driscoll, Martin Williams, you know, Jamie Roberts, any of these players, Adam Jones, Richard Hibbard. The minute he thinks you can't cut it, you're gone. And it's, you know, and some of those calls may have been very, very harsh in the past, but that's what makes me think that he will do a good job again, is at international level, selection is absolutely crucial. And I think he gets that right more often than not. And it's nowhere is it more crucial than on a Lions tour.
No, I agree. Yeah, I think the backroom boys would be interesting. I just think that it would be, it gives him the opportunity to do something completely new if he wants to.
I tell you something that is good news for them, and this is off the pitch, and that's, I can't remember if it was this week or the week before, but they announced a sponsorship deal with Vodafone, which is supposed to be in the region of 5 or 6 million, which again is... you know, I think it's roundabout on a par with what happened last time round, but given what's happened to the sponsorship market since then, and also COVID, I think that's a really good, encouraging deal for them to do. And the fact it's kind of a mass consumer brand. Sorry to get all horribly markety, but you know, it's not Standard Chartered or whatever the hell it was last time round. You know, something that only 0.001% of the country would ever have any interest in, but it is something that people can use and buy, and I think that in a way it's another way of promoting the Lions is by actually using the sponsor, because God knows how, you know, there must be what, I don't know, 10 million Vodafone users throughout the country, so that is another way of actually kind of spreading the word and keeping Lions front of mind. So I think that's something that's potentially really encouraging for them, and I think they'll be really pleased with that.
No, it was Standard Life, wasn't it? I think Standard Life last time.
Something like that. Mm. Yeah. So it's one of those. I think that's generally that generally will be a weight off the mind of the Lions CEO, and something that he won't have to worry about. So that's certainly good news. And we also mentioned before the break, moving on to different topics, that Nick Williams, Cardiff Blues stalwart, obviously, actually one of very few Pro 14 stalwarts, isn't he? Because he's done his time at a number of clubs, obviously playing in Ireland and played for Aironi in Italy as well. So he's a player we've seen loads of over the years. And obviously age wasn't on his side, particularly the way he plays, but still a big blow to lose him, and will leave a big hole in that Cardiff Blues squad.
He's an amazing player, and you know, even last year when there was a traditional kind of, they should have had those, you know, those drinks breaks they've been having for football. It's like he was having at least two or three of those every game, but he's an incredibly talented player. Obviously, all thunder, but with great hands, and it was just whenever you saw him play, you just thought, okay, this is going to be fun. It's just always, you know, sardonic smiling, sarcasm, banter with the ref, you know, the whole thing, always, never, you know, he was just an amazing servant, really. Just a real personality. Probably, you know, one of those rare rugby players that would probably actually draw people to go to a game on the basis of his attendance, you know, the basis of him being in the team.
Yeah, a real, I mean, such a busy player, in the latter stages of his career. It wasn't just, okay, I'm going to go out and I'm going to play for 50 minutes and have, you know, a few big tackles and a few big collisions.
Yeah.
Over the ball, incredible for a man of that size to be so good. I know once he's on, you know, you're going to struggle to shift him, but the balance to get in the right position without giving away penalties takes some doing. And as you said, the hands, you know, a real exciting player to watch. And I think it's safe to say off the field, he'll leave a big hole in the dressing room too. So, you know, probably a loss that Cardiff Blues were expecting sooner rather than later. But certainly someone who's given a huge amount of joy to their fans in particular.
Is there any sense of what he's going to do now?
I think I saw an interview somewhere this week that said he's keen to stay within rugby in some kind of coaching capacity or something like that. And as always with a quality player, you want to see them stay within the game. You know, obviously you had Gethin Jenkins and Matthew Rees from within the same manner last year, moving from playing into coaching. And they were two players that I just thought, God, they're such canny operators. You don't want to lose what they bring to the party. And, you know, if they're able to help the next generation of players, that would be a huge help. And you kind of feel the same with Nick Williams. You just think there's got to be somewhere that would really benefit from working with a character like that. And you just think if you're able to carry on playing till that point in your career, you've obviously looked after yourself, stayed in good nick, and for want of a, you know, if you'll excuse the pun. So I don't know. The temptation is always say, I think he'd make a great coach, but if that's what he wants to do, I'm sure someone would be keen to bring him on board, particularly the connections he would have made over the years. I'm sure there'll be an old coach or two or an old pal who's keen to bring him as part of their coaching staff.
Yeah, I mean, it's a whole, as in he's an enormous personality, but it doesn't sort of weaken the Blues terribly, does it? Because the, you know, back row is an area of strength for them.
I think so, in particular, a big ball carrying eight. They were kind of preparing for this when they signed Sam Moore. So
yeah.
I think that will be his, you know, will be his role when they're able to play him. Obviously, they've got Navidi to come back, who is, you know, just gets better and better and better. And he was missing for large chunks of last season. And just look at club level, looks equally as comfortable at eight as he does at seven or six.
Yeah.
And that is saying something, because it's such a different role. And yeah, he is just a magnificent player. So they're two fabulous options at eight. So, you know, I think you're right. While it is a big hole in terms of the dressing room, the back row is one of the areas where they've been very, very strong, and some great young talent there coming through as well. You know, the likes of Jim Botham and God, I always get his name wrong. Shane Lewis Hughes, I want to say.
Shane Lewis, yeah.
He's getting really, really fantastic prospects alongside the Jenkinses and Robinsons and Navidis and so on. So yeah, they've got some really good options within their ranks.
We're both in agreement, as long as they don't shove Seb Davis there,
I'm very much in agreement with that. And it seemed like that was driven very much by the national side. I think that was Gatland's brainchild, really.
Yeah.
To play him at eight. And he's a brilliant athlete, but at his stage, I think you need to be concentrating on one position, you know, much like Alan Wynne-Jones used to do a bit at six, which seems mad now, doesn't it? You know, to think he was ever playing on the flank. He obviously, I'm not saying he's going on to be Alan Wynne-Jones, but I think for what it's worth, my opinion is that his best position is in the second row.
Yeah.
And he will be a great athletic ball playing second row. And if you've got some good grunt alongside him, I think he's got lots more to give. Him and Adam Beard, I think, find themselves in similar situations in terms of their rugby development, that they've both kind of been thrust into the national setup at a pretty young, young in terms of experience age. And it's a hard, hard position at international level that I think, you know, you've now got to kick on and show you're able to do it consistently. So yeah. I think both of those players have got bright futures ahead of them.
And then you got You've still got Will Boyd and Ellis Jenkins. It's mad, isn't it?
I'd forgotten about Will Boyd, and what a great signing he's been for them. He's Mr. Dependable, a brilliant club. I think he's international class, to be honest. I'm surprised he hasn't had a cap at some stage. It is testament to how many fantastic Welsh back rowers there are, but he'd be certainly good enough to pull on a red jersey.
And Josh Turnbull.
Yeah, there you go. Well, there you go, yeah. And Turnbull, I think, has done such a good job in the row that age starts to creep up with him. I think second row is probably where you'll see the bulk of him playing now. I think he's more a second row than he is a back row forward. But again, a great option to have.
Yeah, absolutely.
Good stuff. Right, well, look, there is a couple of things we need to finish up on. And the first of these is a moment of genius from my wife, who said, when I said I was doing the pod with Yestin today, she said, oh, you should have a feature called Yestin Years. It's like Yesteryears, but Yestin Years. I was like, that's absolutely brilliant. Now, much like Alan Partridge, I'm kind of like, well, it's just a name at the moment. We don't know what it is. So if anyone has got any ideas about what to do with this fantastic title, I'd love to know, because it feels like, you know, you love to take a walk down memory lane as much.
What are you saying? What are you saying, Jed? I just because I'm comfortably about 20 years older than any other contributor is probably what you're saying, isn't it?
I'm not saying that. I'm saying that you'd like to have a stroll down.
A ramble.
Yeah. A little pedal on your bike down memory lane. Yeah. And I don't know. There's got to be something in this. So if any listeners have got any ideas with what we could do, either sensible or not sensible, I would love to hear them, because it feels like that's too good an opportunity to miss.
Anything with my name in it is a good start, because obviously living in the southeast of England, where most people still call me Lestin. Even colleagues I've worked with for 4 years, anything that can extend the brand is good with me.
I'm looking forward to when we start manufacturing t-shirts with hashtag Yesteryears on it. Your kind of catchphrases, I think, things like that. That's when you know we've made it. Hashtag Yesteryears on the front, and things like on the wrong side of the letter estuary on the back. That's what I'm really looking forward to.
Yeah. Okay. I'll get designing immediately.
And we can have them. Yeah. We can have them in Swansea colours and things like that. And people are going mad for them.
Yeah. Definitely.
Well, that feels like the perfect place to bring this week's ramble to an end. Yestin, thank you once again for joining us. It's always a pleasure to catch up, and I'm sure we'll be doing plenty of it as we finish this season and go into the new season. I'm not even sure when it begins. Oh, actually, that is one thing we haven't mentioned, though, is the rescheduled Six Nations fixtures. So that they're going to be played in October, which is something for us all to look forward to. But there's still a big TBC next to the Wales Scotland fixture as to where it's going to be played. Do you have any thoughts or preference when it comes to this?
I've got my tickets on the wall, and I know that sort of regular tickets don't, but I'm fortunate enough, my father bought the benches in 1969 for 50 quid. Obviously, they're considerably more expensive now, but I don't think I'm going to go, actually. Anyway, I just got this feeling. I'm still a bit uncomfortable about kind of the idea of kind of like crowds and that, but I don't have any issue with playing them in at Twickenham or Wembley. I've gone PR bonkers today, haven't I? But I'm just thinking, what a bad look it would be. It's like, sorry lads, we've got to like close the hospital down because we've got a rugby match. Is that all right? You know, it just doesn't look good, does it?
There's just too much uncertainty around, you know, around those things. Because, you know, even let's say if the hospital wasn't needed, let's say we go into local lockdown and that fixture is then nobbled or has to be played behind closed doors. You can't afford to take that risk given the the financial hole that the union are in, or certainly the short-term financial hole that the union are in. I know people are going to throw, well, they just signed Jamie Roberts for the Dragons at me, but it's...
It's not quite the same, as the price tags are marginally different, aren't they?
They are marginally different. And, you know, obviously, let's not go back into that rabbit hole, but you've just got to make them the most sensible call now. I understand that having a home game at Twickenham feels pretty weird, but if it's the right call, it's going to be for a short period of time, and we'll all forget about it pretty soon after. Wembley might be a viable option. I think obviously we've got the history of playing at Wembley before, and there's not that same level of discomfort when it comes to playing at the home of the English football team rather than the rugby one. Because I think the other options in London just aren't going to be too viable. Tottenham and West Ham, will be more bothered about their own fixtures. So I think that might be too difficult. And just playing it elsewhere in Wales, even if we are able to play stuff in front of the crowds, it's going to be limited capacity. So you've got to give yourself a big old stadium to get as much money in as you can. I see sometimes this Facebook group that I set up 2 years ago, there's just all kinds of madness on at the moment that people say, "Oh, WRU, just thinking about money." It's like, well, yes, because the game doesn't run on thin air. Those players like to be paid to play rugby. It's been a professional game for 25 years. Likewise, the regions need subsidising from the union in order to exist. And even the community game relies on handouts from the union. So let's do everything we can to make sure that they can bring this money in. And I'm not on the union payroll here. I'm not here to do a PR job for them and Tub Thump. But if they're we need money coming into that union so that we're as best protected against whatever might happen in the next few uncertain years. And that goes from every level of Welsh rugby. So I think we just got to get them played wherever we can bring the most money in.
Yeah, it's the whole thing seems fairly unemotional. And if you look at the cricket, for instance, the initial, obviously they're behind closed doors completely, but it would have appeared that these events were put on, for certain reasons, primarily to address responsibilities to broadcasters and things like that. But they still managed to, well, they were very interesting, really interesting so far. It's been fascinating. So there's the arguments about where the venue is played is still secondary to what's going to happen on the pitch. And that's the stuff that really is the most interesting aspect, because we're talking about an underperforming national team and we want them to do well. So, we want them to play to the best of their abilities. And the whole debacle about the initial postponement of the Scotland match was the lowest point in a period where the Assembly government then sort of pulled its finger out and started acting with a bit more decisive action. So and has been internationally recognised for doing so. So you've got to go with it. You can't be complaining too much. I think we've got to be pragmatic.
Yeah, and you know what? I think the other thing is that of all the people getting worked up about it, I don't think the players will be at all. Whether they play it in Twickenham or Wembley or wherever, you just treat it like a World Cup match, and you say, right, okay, it's a bit of an odd scenario, but we'll treat this as our base for the 2 weeks around training or whatever it might be. And we'll go out there and play the game like the professionals that we are. And I don't think Justin Tipperick or Alan Wynne-Jones or Lee Halfpenny will be particularly fazed by going out and playing at Twickenham or Wembley or wherever it is.
It just doesn't strike me as an international weekend, as in Cardiff, just doesn't seem like anything that's on the horizon.
I mean, the only pragmatic thing that you could say is, you know, is it wise to have potentially 30,000-40,000 Welsh men and women travelling from Wales into England, particularly London, and then back again? But as you say, I think that's probably a decision that's made by Welsh government rather than the governing bodies of the sport.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, there we go. We managed to finish on a sensible point. But yeah, if you have got any suggestions for Yestin Years, which I expect will be less than sensible, then please let us know. But yeah, Yestin, thanks for joining us. Been great fun as always, and we will be back to chat rugby with you very, very soon.
Podcast Network.